Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We truly are living in remarkable times. In order for the world to wind up in an ascension experience, we have to move through unpredictability, chaos. It's not whether we are going to ascend. It's which timeline is the collective consciousness of the planet going to choose for the ascension. Spirituality is not just about a bunch of high-vibe people sitting around waiting for the world to catch up to them. We are also being challenged to wake up out of the spiritual ego so that we can create a world where healing and awakening is for everyone, any religion, any vibration, any belief system. Embody your light, right? Your vibration is the reputation of the actions you take. And that's the only spiritual practice there is. And if everyone stopped for one moment and said, I am the divine, darkness would disappear off the face of the planet. True spirituality is called reality. And reality includes waking up and growing up. It includes honoring your divinity. It includes paying your bills and washing your dishes, and saying namaste to the beautiful forms of light that are all beings on this planet. Welcome to reality.
Welcome to the Inspired Evolution. I'm your humble host, Amrit Sandhu, and you're tuning in to a conscious conversation designed to help you grow. Our mission here is simple. It's for you to live your purpose, live your best life, live the life you love. This podcast is sponsored by Enthusiasm for Life, by Great Creation itself. To keep the good vibes flowing for myself and yourself, do us a solid, subscribe to the Inspired Evolution podcast on YouTube, the home of the Inspired Evolution podcast. Now sit back, relax, open your mind, open your heart to this conversation and stay inspired. Keep evolving.
Awesome. Alrighty. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to the Inspired Evolution. And we have today, inspiring our evolution, Matt Kahn, world-renowned author, incredible spiritual teacher. Brother, welcome back to the podcast. Thank you so much for doing this here with us today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
It has been so fun just trying to get this episode connected, up, running, and running. Right? That I'm inspired by potentially what's coming through. And I wanted to start today's conversation a little more. Generally, we talk about more spiritual topics that are like, you know, evergreen, you know, persistent through time. But there's something that seems to be happening. Like, I've been following your work for the longest while. And there has been this shift that's emerging in consciousness, and you've discussed it, and maybe it's inspired evolution. Things are always in evolution and expansion, you could argue. So maybe that's what we've been speaking to. But it does seem to be something at this particular juncture where we're at in time and space, that something's going on. You called 2024 the quickening. Maybe you can describe that. Maybe that's an access point into the conversation. But I'd love to get your awareness on where we are right now, because it seems to be remarkable.
We truly are living in remarkable times. And in order for the world to wind up in an ascension experience, we have to move through unpredictability, chaos, some sense of limitation. Just like when you watch any movie, there has to be some sort of stress or pressure in order for there to be a release. The ascension is the release. We are currently living out the building up of a pressure that's going to lead to that release. And so, you know, like any good movie, we just are watching, observing, we're interacting with the storyline. And we're watching how the world has already ascended. We're watching how the ascension took place, because from my intuitive connection to the universe and the information that I receive so clearly, it's not whether we are going to ascend. It's which timeline is the collective consciousness of the planet going to choose for the ascension. So are we going to choose a roundabout ascension where it's a longer journey with more subtlety, or is it going to be a more direct route with a more intense experience? And I think if we all look at the world right now, we can probably see which one we are choosing. So humanity is going through a rather direct trajectory of ascension. And so right now, we have the world on a collective level becoming or experiencing third dimensional patterning in the world, but with greater awareness. So we're becoming aware of corruption. We're becoming aware of greed. We're becoming aware of misleading media headlines. We're becoming very aware of special interest. We're becoming very aware that there are few people that have a lot and a lot of people that have very little. And we are, in a sense, bringing what has been under the rug into greater awareness. And this has been happening in our individual lives, but this is where it has really started happening on a collective level. And things like George Floyd really started to show us this rapid expansion or quickening that I've talked about. I did a video talking about the quickening of 2024. Wish I could remember anything I transmitted. Fortunately, I can't. But what I can say is that we are examining the third dimensional patterning of the world that's been running the world for so long, and we are experiencing it in greater awareness. And the choice every human being has right now is, will we allow this shift to bring us into greater conscious awareness, or will we lash out, shut down, or be buried by our addictive patterns? So we, each of us, are contributing to this quickening of ascension by how we choose to perceive and respond to what's being revealed. And I find it to be a very exciting time, and it also is a quite an intense time. And each of us get the opportunity to decide how we're going to live through this transition point.
One of the ways I heard you articulate it or transmit it was, it just feels like we've been having multiple dark nights of the soul, one after the other. And we've literally been in the trenches. And when you said that, like, some part of me, like, the pressure on the gas valve came off a little bit, to be honest. I was like, oh, it's not just me. Touch wood. Because it has been, as you described, quite an intense time. And it does feel like we're taking, like you said, a bit of a direct route, and that sort of is inspiring, but also, you know, has with it this awareness that, like, hey, get your spiritual warriorship ready. Like, here we go. Like, you know, get your shields, get everything up and running. You were going to say something.
Well, and to that point, most people, and this would help a lot of people who are listening to this, you're not going to be inspired mainly by what you see revealed in the world. You're going to be inspired by how you choose to respond or how other heroic beings around you choose to respond to the actions of the world. So when I say the world is in a place of inspiration, I don't necessarily mean that when you look at the world, you should be inspired by what you see. What you see in the world is challenging each of us to say, what are the action steps I can take in response to what I see? And how can I be that which I would be inspired to observe in others? And if we can't find that in ourselves, can we train our mirror neurons consciously? Can we say, if I don't have what it takes to be the inspiration I want to see in the world at a time like this, can I actively look for inspirational beings who are leading by example? And by observing them, my mirror neurons become familiar with making heroic choices that are not confused with sacrifice, right? There are so many people that hear, be the change you want to see in the world. Let's be honest with ourselves. Can you make heroic choices right now in the world? And if you can't, that's okay, because that just means you should actively seek out, whether it's stories online or people in your life, whether you know them or follow them, that are doing inspirational, heroic, philanthropic things in the world, that as you inundate your consciousness with beings who are acting the way that you want to bring to this planet, by observing that, you are going to train your mirror neurons to resonate and be attracted to the options in your life that will allow you to be that heroic and inspirational. So again, it's not about looking at the world as if it's inspirational. It's, am I ready to inspire through my choices? And if not, who can I focus on and allow my mirror neurons to develop a level of alignment and resonance with the type of choices I would like to be able to make at this time in history?
Thank you so much for clarifying that. I find myself at certain moments having, I'll be having a challenging time and my friends would be like, how are you going today? And I never want to say, oh, I'm going badly, you know, because your words are very powerful as well, right? So it's right. Like, oh, I'm having, you know, a terrible day. So I try, like, not that I'm avoiding it, but what I find myself saying is like, okay, and my friends find me really kooky because, you know, I could just say, hey, I'm having a challenging time, but I will take the roundabout way and I'll be like, you know, I'm having one of those days where I'm contemplating the fact that God doesn't give his toughest challenge to his greatest warriors. He creates his greatest warriors by giving them the toughest challenges. I say that to them and they're like, yeah, great, you're having a tough day.
I want to challenge that for a second, just in the name of this conversation. Because I've actually done a teaching on this. So let me ask you just a question. Again, there's nothing wrong. There's just awareness. If you're having a bad day, what are you afraid's going to happen? If your friend goes, how was your day? And you say, it was terrible. What are you afraid's going to happen? Because authenticity shouldn't come with a punishment of messing up manifestation. Like if that's how the universe worked, like, how dumb would God be if you legitimately were created to have a bad day and you were honest about the bad day and then the God, the big celestial narcissist goes, they said bad, give them more of that. Like, is this how we think it works?
Well,
why can't we just have a bad day?
Well, going back to what you're saying about mirror neurons, and I appreciate you helping clear this up. Brilliant. Because going back to what you're saying about mirror neurons, I don't want to mirror to myself that I'm a victim.
And so that's the trepidation.
That's the trepidation.
So let's challenge this. And I love this, by the way. If you have a bad day, that doesn't always make you a victim. That makes you an honest person. Like if life is going, like for example, If you see this mark on my face, if you see this right here on my face, my wife and I just got a brand new puppy, 2 months old. Ah! Gorgeous puppy, French bulldog named Penny. We love this dog.
Penny.
Dog has a little bit long nails. We need to cut these nails, right? I got scratched out of a moment of exuberance. Obviously not malicious. I love this dog. I laughed when it happened. Didn't even know I was bleeding. My wife went, "Why are you bleeding?" "Really? I'm bleeding." And we had a day with the puppy yesterday, and it was long. We didn't sleep, and it was a tough, tough day. I'm not victimized by the puppy. I'm just able to say, you know what? Today was hard. And the freedom is that there's nothing inside of me that thinks or feels like I'm creating anything in the future by being honest about right now. And if life wants to go out of its way to have a difficult day in my reality, that must be the truth it wants me to speak. And so, like, for example, when you say, "I don't want to be a victim to it," and I totally appreciate it, but that to me feels like someone who says, "I don't want to talk about my wounding and give the people that harmed me the satisfaction of knowing they hurt me," where the healing that happens in trauma is saying, "This person devastated me. They shut me down, and I've never been the same since. And until I speak that truth, I can't be liberated from it." What if we just were just boldly honest about everything?
Yeah, the fear in this yes. is that those pits are bottomless
right.
to excavate. And so obviously, yes, to do the work and excavate them, but to be walking around open-pitted and sharing that all the time
right.
as being an open-pitted individual, I appreciate the vulnerability that's being espoused, but then also the fear is repulsion.
Right. So that tells us right there what's motivating that choice. It sounds spiritual on the front, but underneath it, it's actually the wisdom of fear. So is it really wisdom to say, "Ooh, I'm afraid of people being repulsed by me"? Now, the good news is the only people that can be repulsed by you are the people you're not meant to spend much time with. The people that you're done spending time with will be repulsed for any reason. Now, here's the funny thing about the law of karma. The people you're done spending time with will be repulsed by you, whether in fortune or in adversity. The moment it's done is the moment it's done, and the story we make up is the story we make up. It reminds me of a teaching I did last night, actually, in my membership, where I did a transmission about the way people act in adversity is the way that they would act in extraordinary amounts of abundance. It's just the story they tell themselves. For example, someone would say, "If it wasn't for my childhood wounding, I wouldn't act this way." The truth is, if they didn't have any wounding, they would act the same way and they'd have a different perspective. And so then we kind of flip it around, and it's not the childhood wounding that causes people to act a certain way. It's the childhood wounding that reveals the ego we bring into the world to heal so we can actually heal all ego structures. And so we can flip this around quite dramatically.
Hey there, guys. Sorry for interrupting your viewing, and I know you're loving Matt Kahn. In this episode, we go over awareness and choice and just the importance of being able to make really aware choices, integration of self, light and darkness, commitment to the light, humility over chauvinism, compassion and unity, and ultimately how to really step into spiritual evolution. Now, if you're loving this conversation and conversations like this, please do subscribe to the channel today. Thank you so much in advance. Back to today's episode. That bleeds into one of the questions I had today, and I don't want to disrupt you from flipping it, because if you wish to flip it, we should
we'll
go
keep
there.
Flipping.
But I'm just wondering if this also segues into it a little bit or adds some gravitas to the conversation, because one of the things that is present in this quickening, this awakening that we're currently going through, this acceleration, let's call it that, because we've picked potentially the intense timeline. The dissolution of spiritual ego structures. And hearing you speak to that was profound for myself, because as you can imagine, it shows up again and again and again. And then also, yeah, I shouldn't pre-program your response, but I'll just add this in just to sort of so we can go all the way in. From my perspective, it was really healing to hear that you're going to have challenges and then you're going to have like a way to navigate those challenges. And generally, if it's a big enough crisis, you're going to have a spiritual sort of drop in around that. Like your spirit will show up to support you through that. And then you've made your way through that. And then you sort of develop this, hey, like encasing, which is like, hey, and now I've got this like spiritual support that I made it through such a thing. And now you sort of hardened the outer casing with a little bit of ego that naturally drops in around that, which goes, hey, like, check it out. Like I made it through this thing. And then now the invitation once again in the quickening is to even dissolve that into like coming back to humility. Can you, yeah, my awareness around that and just normalizing how even the ego structure for spiritual ego can be so, people sort of look down on it. And yet I understand why, but there's like a normalization as part of the necessary, as it being a necessary part of an awakening process.
Well, you know, it's ironic that even the part of us that looks down on the spiritual ego is the ego, right? So, and so that's hilarious. And then the other thing is the ego is really the part of us that says, the ego is the part that has a avoidant relationship with truth. Right. The difference between an ego and a spiritual ego is an ego says, here's what I'm going to lose by telling the truth in my human life. And the spiritual ego says, here was what I'll spiritually lose by telling the truth. So in your everyday garden variety ego is if I tell the truth, I'm going to lose my house. I'm going to lose my career. I'm going to lose my partner. I'm going to lose the respect of my children, which are very intense things. Spiritual ego is I'm going to lose my vibration. I'm going to lose my point of attraction. All my chakras will be taken away from me. God's going to hate me. I'm never going to ascend. I'm probably going to have 15,000 more lifetimes to have to come back to this hellhole. And so it's actually all the same. It's just a matter of what are you afraid to lose spiritually by telling the truth? What are you afraid to lose concretely by telling the truth? And can we actually see through ego, not as if ego is bad, because the small self or the ego, which is necessary, is as necessary as the higher self. The big confusion is that people try to train their small self to become the higher self. And then you have all these small self egos running around this world dressed up like the higher self. And they're all still acting like the smaller self. So it's like kids putting on fireman boots and then acting like they're firefighters. They're not firefighters. They're just wearing dad's outfit. So we have to have a small self and a higher self at the same point. The difference is you change your identification. Whereas I have a small self, like I'm Matt Kahn. I have an ego. It's not the kind of ego that's similar to other people's egos. Mine's more integrated. But you can't integrate an ego unless you have an ego. And if you have an ego, you can actually use your ego to be aware of your ego. And so the ego helps you be aware of your conditioning, your patterns, your choices. That's being done through the lens of your higher self. And the choices you make will be determined whether I'm identified with my smaller self or ego, whether I'm identified with my higher self. When I'm identified with my higher self, my small self, my ego, is safe within me. When I'm identified with my small self, I'm too busy being my small self that my small self doesn't feel supported or protected. So I have to identify with my higher self to keep the smaller part of me safe. And spiritual people, and I'm a spiritual people, I play an interesting role in the spiritual evolution, and yet spirituality is changing. And I'm so glad to watch this and help and usher it in this new paradigm. because it needs to change. Spiritual beings are either avoiding their small self while playing it out, because what you avoid, you play out. That's the law of karma. Or trying to hide from their small self, overly spiritualize it, or act like you got to erase the ego to be the higher self. And historically, the people that act like they don't have egos, behind the scenes, are doing the most egocentric thing to harm a lot of people. If you watch documentaries on cults and you see all these people who act like they don't have egos, well, what the hell are they doing behind the scene but causing a lot of chaos and hurting a lot of innocent people? So it's okay to have an ego. You just don't have to be identified with it. And I think one of the most interesting things is that the ego, when used by the awareness of your higher self, helps you see where you are in your spiritual ego. Like if I'm having a tough day, can I just say, you know, someone goes, hey, I'm Reed, you know, I'm Matt. How's your day? Well, it's fantastic. And today's just tougher than usual. And then my friends will say, what can I do to support you? You know, I appreciate you asking me how my day is. I'm actually fine. But thanks for asking. I don't actually need anything. But the truth is the truth. It would be kind of like every day is like a different adventure on a different aisle in the grocery store. One of those aisles smells like flowers and detergent, and it smells nice. One of those aisles smells like pet food. Why pretend one doesn't smell like the way it is? Like I'm on the aisle that smells like pet food today. And that's just the way it is. Or today smells like Febreze. It smells like spring flowers. But like, I think we have to get over this thing in our spiritual egos of like, I have to say and pretend my day is the way I'm going to force it to be in the future. And we are one with the universe, and the universe knows what we're doing. The universe goes, I'm just waiting for you to wake up out of that. The universe is charmed and endeared by this. The universe watches us run around and do the shit that we do. And the universe goes, as I created you to be, and you are just giving me, the universe, something beautiful to wake up within. And this is all innocent. But what would happen if we all stopped playing these unnecessary spiritual games? Because an unnecessary spiritual game, I would define as what divides you from truth. You don't have to be overindulgent. You don't have to spend 20 minutes doing a monologue about how shitty your day is, unless that's how shitty it was. But what happens if someone says, how is your day? And that's God. God is testing you to see how honest you're willing to be. And you go, you know, kind of shitty. And then there's a part of you that goes, oh, I think if I say that, I'm going to manifest more of the same. Well, by saying how your day really is, you're waking up out of that belief. So that's actually a very positive thing, just depending on how we see it. So the good news in all of this is that we're getting to a point in history where having an ego is not a excuse to avoid doing the inner work. And having an ego is also something that's a little therapeutic for spiritual people that have been taught or indoctrinated to be too ultra puritanical, which then makes you just a future foot soldier for the next cult you're going to wander in.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's quite a few threads in there to unpick, and I appreciate you clearing that. Let's start with one of the more inspirational ones. So you mentioned lower self, higher self, and the reconciliation of the space and the place of the ego through that. And the easy question, I guess, to ask before I get into that is part of what's going on in this current quickening.
Yeah.
Are these the type of structures that are dissolving, and that's what's helping us accelerate?
I would say so. I would say they're not dissolving. I would say they're integrating, right? They're merging, right? And I would say, like, I say small self, because for any of us in our lives, we're aware when we're acting out from our youngest parts. Like, if you go home and visit your family and you go walk in first as your spiritual self, you go, "Hello, mother. Hello, father. Namaste to you. You're right. We're all the divine." And then 10 minutes later, you know, they started it, right? And we go into that whole life is
our
so funny how quickly
was
does
all about
it.
The inner child and healing the inner child. So
right. When the inner child tries to act out spiritual self, boy, universe has fun with that. So I like think of it like small self and higher self, and the higher self is what acts through the small self, and when you're not as identified with it, the small self becomes a small opening, and then becomes over time a bigger opening for the higher self to express itself through. In the same way, you would look at a child and you would say they have glimmers of wisdom that they're going to have to mature and grow into as an adult. So we respect that children are adults in training, right? Over many, many years. Spiritually, it's the same thing. So I think that what we're witnessing is the integration of the small self and the higher self. And both are very necessary. And the best example I can give you, one of them at least, is a staircase. You can say the highest step is what got you to the next floor. But if it wasn't for that first step, you never would have taken the journey to the higher. So if you had a staircase that only had the highest step, how would you get there? So we honor that the first step is as equally as important as the highest, and all the steps in between are equally important. And so I think we're in a spirit where spirituality is being redefined right now, and it's being brought out of the spiritual counterculture. One of the ways I'm going to describe this is, spirituality is being liberated from the spiritual special interest groups, because in politics, we don't like special interest groups. So we can't have in spirituality, you can't have all this just with the high vibe people, because consciousness needs to go to all neighborhoods, right? If we're all just going to hang out in the high vibe, we're not spreading the light where it needs to go. Kind of like if I want to donate my time to a soup kitchen and I want to feed hungry people, and then I find out that the place I need to go to feed hungry people is not the best neighborhood, well, then maybe I'm going to let my high vibe protect me to serve the people that need me. You know, if we're going to, and we all have to use our intuition, that's an interesting example, but we have to be able to, at a certain point, not keep spirituality in the special interest high vibe clubhouse. But we're getting to a point where it's for everyone. And I think the greatest thing we can realize is spirituality is not just about a bunch of high vibe people sitting around waiting for the world to catch up to them. We are also being challenged to actually wake up out of the spiritual ego so that we can create a world where healing and awakening is for everyone. Any religion, any vibration, any belief system has awakening and healing. And so spirituality is quickly becoming identifiable by choices of conduct, not the things we say and repeat. So the things I say that are powerful are because it's how I conduct myself. You can feel the energy I transmit because when I'm in my everyday life, if you ever see me at a grocery store or I'm off stage, I'm acting exactly the way I describe in my interviews. What I speak and what I do are exactly the same because that's my love for this field. That's why I love this. And that's where this is all going, that the people that are going to lead the way, and there's more, there's many in this world, are those whose words and actions are congruent. And that's what's here to inspire the world. And it's going to make spirituality universal. And that's how we're going to manifest heaven on earth, truly.
Hey, your Inspired Tribe. I want to take a quick sec. I wanted to share something today with you that is really dear to my heart. And it's actually what keeps the entire ecosystem around the Inspired Evolution thriving, my one-on-one coaching. So it's basically coaching that helps you live a spiritually aligned life. I coach people from all different types of walks of life. These people are leaders and they're looking to have an incredible spiritual impact in the lives that they're leading for themselves and then also lead in alignment to their values. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Here's a few people that have also transformed through my coaching and here's what they have to say.
Amrit is a fantastic coach.
In a few sessions, he got to a depth that I'd only experienced before working with certain medicines.
He's gone through a lot of the struggles that you're probably facing.
Then my corporate banking job wasn't really doing it.
You feel like you're not making progress towards your goals.
And Amrit's been a really strong, supportive figure in my journey.
I'm more in control of myself.
I'm kinder to myself.
I actually have that vision and a purpose.
I do feel like I'm a better version of myself already.
Amazing energy.
He was easy to talk to, which made me easy to trust him.
Working with Amrit at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and really I was bouncing out of bed.
Whenever I get off the calls with Amrit, best money we've ever spent.
I would not recommend him because I don't want everyone to know about him and then I won't be able to book him. If he gets too busy, I won't get my turn.
I would say absolutely.
There's no way you can work with Amrit for a period of time without being transformed.
So if you're considering him as a coach, do not hesitate because you won't be disappointed.
As you guys can see, there's a lot of people all over the world from all these different corners experiencing incredible transformations. I don't think, if I can say humbly myself, that there is anything quite like this somewhere else online. Most people that, you know, have channels that, you know, grow and grow and grow don't really focus on one-to-one offerings. I have just found that it is the most profound space where you can bring yourself in a private container and really just share what's going on for yourself. And if you want to book in for that call with me, touch base, it's www.amrit.coach/life. That's www.amrit.coach/life. There is a link in the show notes below to book in that call. And yeah, if you want to take your journey further, if you want to dive in deeper and you really want to live a spiritually aligned life, if it's for you, please do check it out. And without too much further ado, once again, for your spirit, for yourself, today's podcast.
What's precipitating for me is how personal truth, actually every grain you put into that sort of container is expanding your field. It's kind of what I'm hearing you share in this moment. And I heard you in one of your transmissions share, I found this really, just a really interesting way to have it described, is that at the moment the light is doing its thing and the darkness is obviously doing its thing, and yet the light is really coming through to help save the darkness from itself.
That's right.
Can you unpack that a little bit further for us at this juncture?
Yeah, the darkness is a manifestation of the light, but it's the part of the light that doesn't know itself as the light. The darkness is in a self-destructive pattern, and the mirror of its own self-destructive tendencies is how destructively it harms and hurts others around it. And so the darkness can't ever have enough to control. And when there's nothing externally for darkness to control, it has to turn on itself, which is why darkness will never be powerful, because darkness can't use unity consciousness to get its agenda across, because there's too much the darkness. You know, if you talk about a secret society of board meetings or whatever is happening, you have all these groups that splinter off and turn on each other, because darkness can't pull off unity consciousness. that would require compromise, and that would require listening, and that would require thoughtfulness. That's not what darkness is. Darkness is mayhem. Darkness for like 5 minutes can pull off organization. And then it's like, what's happening over here? So darkness is always battling with itself, which is why the reason why things seem so secretive is because no one has their shit together. And once the light in human beings assembles in the same direction to say, look, we can all believe different things. We can all come from different cultures. We can all come from different religions. We can all have different pronouns. We can all have all the different things we have. If we agree on inclusivity, acceptance, and humanitarianism for all beings, and if we agree that healing is equally for victims and predators so that our world can be a safe place. Once we agree on that, right, the light of unity assembles in a large number of people. And what the light is here to do is to free darkness of its own inner torment. It's here to free darkness of a dream it doesn't know it's dreaming because it's too busy trying to control it and pretend it's reality. The light is here escorting the darkness home while saying, thank you for being a creation of light that was here to bring more people back to their light while you insisted on being in the dark. And as we reach a point in this world where people are aware of their light, they're not turning away from their light and making choices that are in the light are more of a desire and not a sacrifice, we won't have a need or anything more to learn from darkness, and darkness literally evaporates off the face of the planet. But in order for us to do that, we have to all move into the light and allow our words and our actions to be congruent to the best of our ability. And again, if we are not ready to make inspired choices on the planet, just give some time to focusing on people who are doing that and let them inspire you, because this is the time where the more inspired choices we make makes what darkness is teaching the world obsolete. That speeds up the fabric of time, that brings about resolutions that need to happen, and all of a sudden we live on a planet where there's no need for darkness. And we'll say thank you for being a part of the ascension that we all chose to step into.
And is that what you mean by spirituality is changing?
Yes. Hmm. Yes, because I was just going to say that spirituality is changing because the majority of people, and I'm not saying this about people that are following spirituality. I'm saying this about the leadership of spirituality. For the most part, people who are leading spiritual missions on the planet up to this point, not everyone, I couldn't generalize, but most people, there's a half in the light, half in the darkness, a foot in each. There's this, we do things that are for the light, but, you know, on the weekends, you got to let loose a little bit. You know, what happens in ego stays in ego. And there's not a full commitment to being in the light. And the thing is that at a certain point of evolution, if you wake up to a certain degree, you will start losing your desire for addictive patterns. You will stop losing your entertainment value for addictive patterning. And at a certain point, you become so awake and you go, I'm not the person I used to. I may not even know what I resonate with anymore, but I can't do the repetitive things that I thought were therapeutic that actually just keep me asleep. And so a lot of people get really afraid of really waking up because they don't know who they are. They don't know what they desire. They don't know what they enjoy because they're being reborn. And you have to give it time to find out who you are, what you're into. And sometimes that can be shocking when I used to be a person, I used to do these things, and all of a sudden I'm not that person and I don't know where they went. That actually can be very shocking. And so the reason why a lot of my teachings are so permissive and focused on love is because it really takes loving yourself to ease yourself through a radical process. If you knew yourself as a person that liked doing X, Y, and Z, and one day you wake up and you don't know where that you went, and you don't know the new you yet, but you don't know where the old you went, that requires love. Because that could be intense, it could be exciting, but for most people, it's horrifying. And that's the work we're doing, is are you willing to wake up one day and be a totally different person? And are you willing to trust the universe to introduce you to the new you slowly while watching the old you perish quickly? That's like a Metallica concert.
Harkens back to a point that I wanted to pick up on earlier, which is around, and I try to find a better way to say it, if I can call it, why the fuck does our heroism, like the heroic nature that you were calling through before, because there's so many things when you think, like when the mind and the small self ego kicks into like heroism, it's like, oh yeah, like conquering shit. But really what we're describing here, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, is like the heroic nature to really just come to a place of safety, and just how much, like, that sounds so character, like I've got to be super heroic to just build safety, to just integrate safety, to just feel into safety, to come home to safety. And then like safety, when you look at safety, it's like, oh, safety. It was like heroic. It's like safety. But yet when in this conversation, it's like, holy shit, safety takes so much work when you're disintegrating and reintegrating all of this stuff, right? Can you shed your light on that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, so I'll give you an example. Let's talk about the difference between chauvinism and true humility, right? Or heroism, right? So like there's this interesting thing in masculinity. And again, masculine not being about the gender of your body, but we all have the energy of masculine, feminine, of course, right? But the interesting thing is that, like, chauvinism, for example, can masquerade as heroism. And chauvinism can be the masculine warrior that says, I'm going to keep the feminine protected. I'm going to keep you safe and I'm going to defend you. And that can sound really, really awesome on the surface, right? But the interesting thing is a true hero, a divine masculine says, well, first of all, I'm not going to protect the feminine to the point where I'm actually disrespecting their power and their sovereignty. Most people that are so into the I'm going to rescue and defend someone wind up imprisoning, trying to control them. And that turns into its own weird plot twist. So chauvinism says, I'm going to go out of my way to protect you. And then you're going to be imprisoned by my level of control in the name of protection. Real heroism says, 9 times out of 10, the one I need to protect someone else from are the patterns in me. So I'm going to go out of my way to make some honorable choices. And if I want to protect people in my life and keep them all safe, then I'll protect them from the forces in me. I'm the only place, and I'm the closest place where that darkness is going to lurk. And if I'm going to make positive choices, it's to protect myself and others from me. That's where we get heroism, is that I'm the only one in the world that has to act out of, you know, in integrity. And if I want to keep this world safe, the only threat is going to be inside this person. And the more often I make heroic choices, the more distance I am from the threat. And that is also an incredible thing to realize, because it takes us out of judgment. Because most people spiritually judge people that do, like, say, criminal activity or do all sorts of things. You know, everyone's a narcissist nowadays. There can't be all these narcissists. There's not that many of them. But people judge, they go and they look down on people's behavior, because the judgment is to save the people who judge, because the people who judge are trying to be distanced from those other people's behaviors. What humility says is that there's only a certain amount of circumstance, there's only a certain amount of opportunity and intention that divides me from someone I'm willing to judge. And if I can admit that what someone else does to hurt another person, I'm equally capable of, I can actually feel good about the choices I make to be a different human being. We are capable of creating. We are capable of destroying. We are capable of destroying what we create, or creating something miraculous out of some form of destruction. And if we are willing to be heroes, we can look at someone who is doing devastation to themselves and other people and say, this person is hurting, and may I pray for their salvation as well as the people they're harming. Because if I pray for and if I intend the healing for all beings, we break the cycle of separation, duality, catastrophe, marginalization, trauma, and harm. But in order for me not to hide behind a spiritual judgment, I have to look at people who do atrocious things and say, if I had a different upbringing, if I had a different experience, it would be shocking to see that we're not really that far apart. And if I can really honestly say that, I can support the healing for all beings, and I can actually give myself a chance to feel good about the heroic things I do in this world, which actually then inspires me to want to do more heroic things, which means I'm speeding up the fabric of time and bringing more heroes to the planet. So it's really interesting how, if we want to keep this world a safe place, who do we have to protect ourselves and the world from? Ourselves. And that's why our choices really matter. And when we have spirituality that is using spiritual ideas to help us BS ourselves and to have one foot in, one foot out, we're done with that. The world's hurting too deeply. The world's in too much of a legit, for real precipice. We don't have time for that anymore. And thankfully, the only spirituality that's going to survive this is what's real, is what motivates each and every one of us to actually make choices that become the inspiration we want to see in the world. And we're no longer concerned with hardship or, you know, sacrifice. We're too excited to be a part of the change. And instead of judging people who act less, we have compassion for their journey. And by us choosing higher, we lift everyone up.
Thank you so much for, yeah, I look at judgment as a razor. Really just and I really appreciate what you're saying about, and this is like the I don't want to call it a forced integration, but kind of does feel a little bit like that. Like, you know, we can't really do this is the stuff I do during the day, and then I spend my time sort of in my practice being spiritual, and then I, you know, back to my day, and then there's my practice being spiritual, and then like the integration of the two is being like, and that's the quickening as well. And in there, one of the questions I had to ask you today was 3D, 5D, because we're kind of, I hear you say this a lot, and to me, intuitively, it makes a lot of sense. But I think just to unpack it a little bit, like, because we do have that 3D self, and then you refer to this 5D self. Is that back to, like, the smaller self, bigger self you were referring to before? It seems slightly different. Can you unpack that for us? Just what's going on there and potentially what's changing for humanity as we go from 3D to 5D?
Well, interestingly, 3D is the part of us that defines certain things as 5D and certain things as 3D. So like, you know, the 3D self. The 3D self is what is basically what judges everyday human life as average 3D nonsense. Like, imagine if you had a store in your neighborhood. Imagine, and your store went out of business in 2 months. And you ask the person, and the person, you have the store without a door. Oh, no, we don't have a front door. That's too 3D. Well, no one could come to your store. That's why I went out of business in 2 months. Like, that's 3D horseshit, right? 3D is the part of us that thinks like we have to dress up like Star Trek people to be spiritual, right? If I defined it in another funny way, 3D is being a part-time light worker, 5D is being a full-time light worker. Like, for me, my spiritual practice is every time I speak to a human being or interact with myself. When I'm talking to you, I'm meeting you as the divine, and I'm sharing with you in this interview insights that want to be channeled. But what I'm doing is I'm actually sharing with your divinity the beautiful and most precious insights that this divine source has gifted me with. And every single time I'm interacting with a human being, whether it's someone at Starbucks making me a latte, or I'm talking to someone in my audience, or someone wants to take a picture with me at the grocery store, which happens all the time, or I'm holding my puppy, it doesn't matter. Every interaction, my spiritual, let's say, reputation, vibration is your spiritual reputation. What you've learned is demonstrated through your behavior. And it's not difficult for me. It's a joy. It's a joyous celebration of, let me share with you how deeply the divine has touched this being. The divine has touched me on so many occasions, and it has changed the molecules of my body, and I've never been the same again. And that's the gospel I share, because every interaction I have with a human being matters and is the most important thing in my life, not the books I write. Books I write are a celebration of this. Everything's wonderful, but there's nothing more important. There is no moment where there's someone I'm talking to that isn't the most important person in the world, whether you are cleaning a bathroom that I'm where I'm washing my hands. Everything is the divine. That's 5D. 3D is when you do that part-time, or you have like a very brief internship. And the rest of the time,
pointing that over there is divine, and I'm over here.
Yeah, namaste or whatever it is. And you know what's really funny? I'll say this. You know, I'm someone that if I go to an event or if I go in life, I get recognized a lot, and I'm humbled by this. What's really funny is when you walk into a spiritual event and someone doesn't recognize me off the bat, which is totally fine. And you see how people treat no one. And then they realize I'm someone, and you watch that shift happens. And I've even had people say, oh, I didn't know it was you. Well, it's the divine, whoever it is. Why all of a sudden does it, oh, I didn't realize Matt Kahn was here. Do you know how weird that feels? Like, I don't want people to, I want everyone to be treated this way. And like, so I find it this whole thing. And it's been like this. Again, spirituality has been the source of my greatest discoveries and has been one of my greatest love affairs, and will always be that way. And for a lot of us, there is so much good that comes with it. But the nonsense needs to go, and it's been here for way too long. We're just getting to a place in the world where things are just too real for it not to be, why are we here? What is this really about? And how much can we give of ourselves to then cause the external part of reality to reflect our light back to us? And we're living in a world where so many people need help, inclusivity, greater resources, that it gives the light we shine something tangible to transform. If not now, when? If not now, right? Like, this is the time. And it I just feel with all my bones, and I'm watching this happen in so many spiritual communities. We're getting past the superficial costume. We're getting past the pageantry, and we're getting to embody your light, right? Your vibration is the reputation of the actions you take. And that's the only spiritual practice there is. Other spiritual practices help you bring that into focus. But that's where the rubber hits the road.
And so it really comes back to choice. One of the questions, I'm going to try and ask the question from down here in 3D, but then also it's about 5D. And I'm conscious of that is the divisive razor again of judgment. However, permit me the permission to go ahead and do this. Are you when you're going through that, are you identifying as, when you're carrying this awareness, are you identifying as divinity? Are you identifying as light? Like, because we're making small choices down here, but then also like having an identity or a perspective can be super supportive in terms of, you know, how that sort of precipitates down here. So what do you identify as, Matt, in those moments? Is it divinity? I've heard you use the word divinity. I've heard you use the word light.
I would say I do experience myself as one with the divine in every breath. The awakenings I've gone through in my life have less and less space between them. And you get to a place where there's just nothing but constant revelation, constant embodiment, which in certain traditions, they'll call that Narvakalpa Samadhi, which is a living meditative state, which means ever being, ever becoming. And so I constantly experience expansion and presence simultaneously, which is known as a super state. I experience the divine. I literally see the vibrational particles of consciousness in all things. I experience the world existing within me, even though I feel like there's a body thinking it's in a world and, you know, this whole thing. But in my experience, in order to identify with the higher self, the higher self is not a higher construct, and most people experience the higher self as just a higher idea of themselves. So for me, my experience of being the divine and identifying with the divine is not limiting my experience of divinity, which is not a choice I made. It's that every identification I've ever had has literally just disappeared and fallen away. And so what I find to be kind of the energy is no identification is the highest identification, because if I were to say I identify with the divine, I'd be identifying with a higher idea about divinity, which would just be a bigger costume my smaller self would have concocted. But I literally don't feel a specific identity. Like when I face you, I don't see my face. Other people do. I don't see my eyes. I'm just aware, and I'm having this experience of divinity. So for me, I don't experience identification. Like, for example, and this is a true story, as everything I say is. I mean, just our words are so funny, right? Like, it'd be like if I said, let me be honest for a moment. But a story was, I was at a group of people, I was at lunch one day with some people, and we were talking about things. And this person was kind of going, you know, had their little, went on a little bit of a share about men. And I'm just listening. I'm fascinated, totally fascinated. And she goes, no disrespect. And I said, oh, no, I don't actually, you know, I don't take respect, or I don't take disrespect from that, meaning I don't disidentify with being a man, nor do I have a big identification with being a man. Right. So if you talk about men, you're going to talk about the men in your life that aren't going to include me. Right. If you talk about a Caucasian person, well, that's just a character I'm playing. My character happens to be Caucasian. And the beauty of identification is I get to play this character called Matt Kahn. Right. This is the wallpaper that the divine wants to shine through. And every day I get to give people a course corrective experience of whatever trauma white dudes or dudes brought to any person or their lineage. So I get to legitimately give course corrective experiences and help show people that around a white person or a male, you're safe when I'm there, which is actually a very, something I take very seriously. But I don't disidentify with gender or culture, nor do I really heavily identify with it. It doesn't inform any choices I make. Like if we go to lunch and the server says, what do you want for lunch? I don't go, well, as a Caucasian male, I'm gonna have to. It doesn't inform anything for me. It's part of a course correction thing I'm doing on a societal level to help heal racism and all these things that we have the chance to do. But and then when it comes to divinity, oh, Matt, what do you want for lunch? Well, as the divine in form, I should really have the plant-based thing because I'm the divine now and you got to be super spiritual. None of that resonates with me, nor does it bother me what everyone else does. So for me, the idea of identification is something that got blown out of my system many, many years ago. And I just live my life as, not even as like I am, like people go, I am. Okay. If you need to hold on to that, that's great. I hold on to nothing. Hold on to nothing. I cope with nothing. A good day is a good day. A day that's less than that, no big deal. I hold on to nothing. I hide behind nothing. And I'm free. That's how I live my life.
Hey there, guys. How interesting is the conversation around super states where you're actually connected to higher states and present state all at the same time? It's all one big super state. I'd love to hear about any experiences you've had of super states or anyone that you know. It's a totally fascinating conversation. What are your fascinations in and around super states? Leave me a comment in the section below. Love to hear from you. That's me writing back to you. Back to the episode. And so for the ego construct, that sounds so unsafe. And yet what you're saying is potentially it's the safest place to be.
Or how it's actually the safest place.
How could you not be? It's like, it's, and that's, sorry, just to butter in there.
No, of course.
Life has held me all the way here. And yet it's like, oh, but life, how do I trust it? Let go at all. You know, it's like that irony. It's like, I've been cradled all the way here. And yet, oh, no, I can't trust that. Sorry.
Right.
Thank you so much.
So the ego identity that we find safety in, it's like people say, I find safety in my identity, but it's the safest place to be in the dangerous neighborhood in the universe. So if you really want to be safe and not around any danger whatsoever, I mean, the closest I can get to an identity is if I said to you, I am whatever the moment requires. So right now I'm required to speak, and so I'm speaking. The only identity I have is I'm some form of a verb in every moment. Sometimes I'm the listener with you. Sometimes I'm the speaker. Sometimes I'm funny. A lot of times I'm funny. I'm insightful. Some, you know, oh, it's time to be compassionate, which is very easy for me to do. Oh, it's time for me to be like my wife and I just got married. And there was a big mix up on the day we got married. And I had to call a car company and go, hey, guys, we need to have a discussion about what we agreed to and what happened. I wasn't mean. I didn't go on Yelp and do all that stuff. I said, hey, I'm not going to go on Yelp. I just want to have an internal conversation. And I got things resolved. I'm not afraid to have a conversation like that, but it happens with, it always, no matter who I am in every moment, it happens with integrity. And if there is an identification, it's, and for anyone watching this, what if you're not a noun, you're not a person, place, or thing? That's just a costume, beautiful costume, no reason to get rid of it. But what if in the noun is a verb, and in every moment, you are only what the moment requires you to be. So even if you're worried, I guess this is what I'm required to be. And if you said that to yourself, you'd wake up out of it in a split second. Because if you accept it's the way it's supposed to be, now it has permission to change. So what if I am whatever the moment requires me to be action-wise? If I'm doing nothing, that's what's being asked of me. If I'm thinking about choices, that's what's being asked of me. The person, place, or thing part, the noun, it's just a beautiful costume. But you are just universal will in action. And the fact that we think that we are deciding to do something and then do it is just a part of the play. It's a part of the magic. And it's beautiful. But I am whatever the moment requires me to be. And if you think of it from that place, acting from inspiration and heroism becomes instinctive. There's no risk. There's no sacrifice. And you're bringing yourself into a greater flow that's already there, but you're permitting it to work through you.
My question today that I wanted to close on, but you've already answered it, was going to be, how do we go about integrating this? It feels like all the spiritual teachings that are coming my way at the moment are just that we've got this personality and we've got divinity is, and just trying to line up the aperture of the lens to sort of let the light just shine the fuck through. So it's part of my French, but yeah, seriously, just woof, just shine through. And I think this whole episode, you've just been articulating how to do that. So that was going to be my question. But I think, is there anything left unturned that you would like to just add in before I let you go today on that?
Well, I mean, the greatest invitation you gave me was like, okay, so then there's the control pattern is still trying to line up the aperture because like here's a question. Not what am I, right? Not what am I, when am I? Because that's the whole spiritual ego, is I've got to do all things a certain way. What makes this moment not it? Like, what makes this, like, as you are right now, and here's the funny thing, just because you're not feeling bliss and having neuroepinephrine or DMT surging through your brain and you're not rolling around in an ayahuasca ceremony, is that what we always need in order to be the divine? And so then we uncover one of the greatest realizations. The ego always needs to control the mind and control the emotional body in order to say, I'm now it. But if we want the divine to fully live in these bodies, we're always divinity. And then we come to this thing that says, well, not all choices are the highest divine order. But if you first accept that you're always the divine, that's what gives permission for all of your choices to be in alignment with divinity. We think we need to be in our egos and control our choices to make sure people don't get hurt. If you accept you are always one with the divine, your choices will start being more in alignment with divinity, which means more inspiration, more heroism, and less control and micromanagement. And that's how the spiritual counterculture is radically disappearing off the face of the planet, because the divine is already everything. And if everyone stopped for one moment and said, I am the divine, once, or more people on the planet did it, darkness would disappear off the face of the planet and climate change, in whatever way it's really happening, would reverse itself. And so really, if we allow the divine to be everywhere, everything's included, and even the insidious things that are heartbreaking, is just waking up more light and more beings. When we fully accept the divine is what we are in every breath, that's when we start bringing that divine remembrance more into this world, no matter what we think or how we feel. And that's when we wake up out of the biggest spiritual delusion. And what I want to just end with is this, is that religion was man's attempt to glimpse spirituality. Spirituality is man's or woman's best attempt to conceive reality. So new spirituality, true spirituality, is called reality. And reality includes waking up and growing up. It includes honoring your divinity. It includes paying your bills and washing your dishes and saying namaste to the beautiful forms of light that are all beings on this planet. Welcome to reality.
Those that want to go deeper, I will put a link to the documentary Healed by Love and your website if you want to join the membership. Matt, how does one thank you, thank the divine you, thank the light that shines through? I don't know. I want to thank you for today's conversation and transmission, and yet it pales in comparison to how I really deeply feel. Thank you so much for sharing yourself so abundantly, so generously here with us today. And obviously it's your life's work, it's, you know, and then your is a word that then also dissolves, but nonetheless it is your life's work that really pours through you in these conversations. And yeah, just thank you so much for sharing yourself with us here abundantly, and I'm just so grateful for you. Thank you.
Likewise, and I want to say thank you to you and everyone watching, because, you know, there's so much that pours through me to be shared, but without everyone who is here watching this and without you inviting me onto this platform, you know, that purpose wouldn't be as actualized. So I offer what I offer in faithful service to all human beings. And I say thank you to the divine of every being watching this, and thank you to the divinity of you, for it is you who gives this purpose a place to land. So I am truly humbled and grateful.
I love you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this amazing episode of The Inspired Evolution. Without you, the Inspired Evolution tribe, this podcast would not be what it is today. Thank you so much for your love and your support. Thank you so much for being so inspired to evolve. It's truly inspiring. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to The Inspired Evolution on YouTube, the home of The Inspired Evolution's video podcast. We release inspiring conversations such as this every week, along with guided meditations and empowering insights, all designed to help you grow and evolve. Honestly, your subscription on YouTube to the channel helps us out a great deal. And one of the other benefits, if you're having any insights or shifts from these episodes that you want to chat about, or if you'd like to leave myself or the guest a message, please do so in the comments on YouTube. I truly look forward to hearing from you. And as always, Tribe, remember to stay inspired and keep evolving.